Hello and welcome to Vervent's podcast, 10,000 Feet. My name is Ethan Wyant and I'm joined today by Peter Rhodes and Dan Hausler. Dan manages operations for our Microsoft Cloud Solutions Provider program, and Peter is a senior client success manager here, managing many aspects of our clients' journeys. Both are some of the biggest Azure geeks I've ever met, and I'm excited for them to join today and go over both some strategy and tactical tips for managing your Azure costs. Without further ado, I'll pass it to the both of you. Welcome, Dan and Peter.
Thanks, Nick.
Yeah,
I like being called a geek right off the bat.
What a warm introduction. Yeah, I mean, I'm glad to be here. And, you know, me and Peter get together like every week and just chat. And we realized, oh, my God, we could turn one of these little chats into a podcast. So this is a fun opportunity to just kind of let people be a fly on the wall. But I think some of the common patterns and things that we talk about a lot kind of center around, you know, the Microsoft five pillars, you know, the well-architected framework. That's their go-to guidance around when you establish a cloud environment and manage one. It's a good checklist to make sure that you don't have any blind spots and that you're kind of operating at a maturity level that you want to be. You can kind of benefit from Microsoft's experience. I mean, they have countless customers and partners, and they've seen what works and what doesn't. They built the platform. So you can kind of learn from the hard lessons of other people, and it's good to look at those five pillars. I think we can spend some time today probably focusing on just one, cost optimization, but I always point people toward that because every customer I've ever worked with has two to three of the pillars well, like, in hand, but there's always one or two that's like a blind spot. And so maybe for those who, you know, feel like they have most of the stuff checked off, but are wondering how can they can best optimize costs, we have some food for thought for them. But I think it kind of has two levels to it. There's the strategy at the high level, maybe the less technical part, which, you know, is kind of my world. And then there's the more tactical, like, okay, what do I actually turn on? What should I actually look at inside the Azure portal to make the most of cost optimization? And I mean, when it comes down to strategy, I think this is not unique to cost optimization, but writing stuff down. I mean, it sounds silly, but it does start with just having a plan that's written down. It takes some discipline. It's like anything else in life. But if you have a plan on how you're going to optimize costs, hey, I'm going to check X, Y, and Z this on a quarterly basis, on annually, I'm going to update that. That type of stuff actually will just kind of help keep things in line, right? And keep you honest. So that's probably my first big strategic tip, yeah. And it's nothing original, right? And you've seen that, Peter, right? A lot of our best customers, they have some kind of written guidance, and that's stuff that we've helped them with too.
Yeah, and if you think about, it gives you something to measure against, right? Like I'm going to get into a little bit later talking about cadence, but momentum is a big piece of this, but also, you know, something to measure against. So if you're thinking about writing down your plan, it's a good, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Road sign, like, where are we at? And I think that's important for maturing.
Yeah. And I mean, maturity is the name of the game. Everybody wants to make sure they're doing, you know, quote unquote, best practices. But I mean, I think a lot of it also starts with just using the platform how it's designed to be used. A lot of us got into Azure, started deploying the first environment, and just kind of felt our way through it. Taking a beat and actually understanding, like, all right, how's this platform supposed to be used from a basic hierarchy standpoint, that'll make managing costs easier in the future. Because in a perfect world, your environment continues to grow as your business does. And what you don't want is to have everything in the exact same bucket. You have a massive subscription and everything is super duper flat and hard, and you have to refactor and move things around. So understanding, just doing some homework before you start deploying, and understanding the relationship of tenant down to subscription, down to resource groups, and then individual resources, can I tag them? That type of stuff, just understanding what those tools are, will help. Because when, at the end of the day, the environment grows or you need to manage costs between multiple teams, being able to understand that hierarchy will let you segment your bill out very quickly, do that kind of cost assignment that makes business decisions and assigning accountability and ownership a lot easier. And that is the trick with cloud. People love to turn things on, but it's hard to go after the fact and say, who turned this thing on? And assigning accountability is a lot easier when you have like proper segmentation, right? So, I mean, I think you've seen that with a lot of our customers that have very flat and just tag the heck out of everything. And then you have some that have really clear, here's a prod sub, here's a dev sub, right?
Yeah, and the tagging is so powerful. And some customers use it really well and some don't at all. And but once you start seeing the power in tagging, it becomes a no-brainer. And I think that goes back to writing it down, right? Like these are this is the plan and this is how we're going to execute.
Yeah, it's like naming conventions and anything else, right? Tagging falls right in there. Man, you'll see people where everybody had a plan on how they're going to tag things, but literally everybody had a plan. And you're like, what are the possible tags that are already in this environment? Oh my God, like there is no pattern. It's like, yeah, every development team had their own set. And now you get to try to figure out how to parse your build using tags. Good luck. So it's good. I mean, write things down and get everybody at least working up the same set of standards. But I mean, at the highest level, I mean, we're here talking about cost optimization. If you're not technical at all and you just want to understand, okay, how do I get the best price? That's probably step zero, right? Understanding where can you even get Azure from? And I think the vast majority of customers get it straight from Microsoft, right? They pay as you go, as they say. They sign a Microsoft customer agreement. They whip out that old credit card and they just start going. And that's absolutely fine. And that's a great way to start. I think that's how everybody starts. But it's good to know what the other options are because they do come with potential discounts. I think as companies grow, there's this long road from starting to hitting, you know, a large enough amount of consumption. And I think roughly it's like when you start tipping that 500 user type count, or you're spending multiple millions a year in Azure, you can really start to then negotiate an enterprise agreement with Microsoft. And at that point, you can start to see some discounts. That long road and that long gap in between is kind of my bread and butter, because I don't think enough people realize that there are other options, namely a cloud solution provider, someone who's a direct partner with Microsoft, but can then start to kind of negotiate on your behalf, right? They work with a lot of different customers, so they can offer special pricing. And so I think that long bridge in between, that gap filler, is where we kind of play best, because A, we can help you along the way, grow the environment, do the things we're talking about today, but also just right off the bat, we can tell you, hey, you can save across the board all your metered consumption. Here's what we can do to save you. Regardless of how well you deploy your environment, you can at least know you're getting a better deal than if you were pulling out the old credit card. So, I mean, you've seen customers come in from other CSP providers and then also just convert over. And I mean, I think you work with them regularly, Peter, and we get a lot of positive feedback, right, on just being in a CSP program and the benefits it provides.
Oh, there's so many benefits. One of them being in my, I know we are a Microsoft partner, but I will say we don't work for Microsoft. So that is a big advantage that you have going through a CSP like us, is we advocate on your behalf. So I do well when you do well. And so, you know, I'm highly incentivized to be aggressive and get you the best, you know, not just the best rates, but, you know, the best solution to whatever technical problem you're having or business challenge.
Yep. I mean, getting access to smart folks like yourself is awesome, because you can kind of say, hey, take a look at this. Am I doing this right? And get some advice along the way. But if the listeners haven't picked up, this is definitely our ad portion of this, right? Like Vervent does a good job as a CSP. And I mean, we're on the same side of the table as the customers. And to be candid and just overly transparent, our goal is to keep your Azure and generally your overall Microsoft bill as low as possible. Because if you come to me and I can drop your bill by thousands of dollars, that's wallet share that I hope you'll also spend with Vervent, because we'll make a better margin on our services than we will in a commodities market like reselling cloud. And so this is just me being really transparent. I want to save you money so that hopefully we can impress you and earn your trust and get that over to our professional and managed services folks, or even other product. So that said, look at all your options. Just be aware whenever you're trying to source Azure, even your licenses, CSPs aren't worth considering. But I'll climb off that soapbox, I'm sure. Folks are tired of hearing about it. I mean, the real, I bet 90% of the people who clicked on this were hoping to get some cool tips and tricks, maybe at the tactical level. We've talked a lot about strategy. I think, Peter, you go in the trenches day in and day out, pulling open the Azure portal and telling people like, hey, consider looking at this. And I don't know if you have any like strong advice for people in that realm of things they should be looking at.
Well, I'd love to. Thanks, Dan. So I work with a wide range of customers, and I've come at this cost optimization practice from both kind of an embedded way with partners of mine, and also from blind. Like, I know nothing about the customer. I know nothing about their application. All I see is their Azure consumption, and so I've learned a lot of different strategies. I'll try to cover some of these that I think maybe will be that are less utilized, maybe or less, you know, people might be aware of them but not recognize the power of them. I will say when I first start looking at any environment, I like to look at the spend from a higher level, both from a timeline standpoint, like 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, and then also from a consumption service family type. And what I mean by that is, what is the compute cost? What is the storage cost? What's the database cost? What are the platform services costs? At both a monthly and then eventually a granular, you know, 30-day daily view. And the reason I do that is it gives me an idea both of what types of workloads some customer has. Are they stable? Is it fairly flat, or is it very variable? Is it scaling constantly? Is there a seasonality to workloads? You know, a lot of spikes. And so I start there.
That's inside, to be clear. Cost management, and then you go into cost analysis, and you're talking about setting those top-level group by settings to service family and maybe a stacked column of monthly basis going back 3 and then 6 months, right? I'm listening to you, and I know what you're saying, but I'm like, I just got off the phone yesterday with 4 different people. The 5th person didn't make the call, and that was the only Azure architect at the customer. So they were getting a class in cost analysis. So yeah, I think for those who are not as familiar, go into cost management, click cost analysis, you'll see what Peter's talking about.
Exactly. So in that cost analysis view, it's so powerful. I mean, that's where I spend a lot of my days, zooming in, zooming out, adding filters, common things that I do very frequently, and I'll get into this in a minute, is around savings plans and reserved instances. But on the cost analysis tool, I very frequently will filter out reserved instance and savings plan charges. And the reason I do that is because I want to know what are you paying for as you go in a consumption model? What are you not reserving, or what are you not using? You know, call it the MSRP rates. You are paying top rate for anything that's not reserved in a savings plan. So I filter that out, which is another, like, it also helps you kind of like, and I know this is a podcast, so I don't have the visual advantage, but it takes out a lot of, you know, those charges that would otherwise skew your views. So I very frequently will filter those out. Another thing I'll mention You know, we group by service family, I mentioned, but also once I know that I'm going to zoom in on compute, I'll filter by just compute workloads, and then I'll filter, and then I'll group it by meter subcategories and by meters themselves, and I'm looking for patterns. And ultimately, I can even get down to the resource level, which is something a lot of people aren't aware of, where I can actually identify the exact resource that's pulling the charge, which is very powerful. You can also add tagging filters. We talked about that. So very, very powerful tool. If you work in an Azure environment, even as an engineer, or you're responsible for Azure environment's consumption, it is a tool. It's a must-have familiarity tool. And it's not hard to get into and use. It can be a little bit intimidating, but it's something that I think if you're responsible for any cost in Azure, you really do need to be familiar with and used to using the cost analysis tool. Now, I want to get into, I think that's kind of base level. One of the tools that I don't think many people are familiar with are called workbooks. I think everyone's probably heard of Azure Advisor. If you go into Azure Advisor, there's a section called workbooks. And these are interactive visualization tools you can pull from multiple different data sources, log analytics workspaces, Azure resource graphs, the metrics, other Azure services. But you can, you know, that's a whole tool on itself. But what I want to talk about is there's pre-built templates. These used to be in preview mode. Now they're in, I think, general. So every environment should have the template for cost optimization workbook. So you can find it again in Azure Advisor under workbooks. And then let me pull it up just so I can give the correct direction. Workbooks, and then under Azure Advisor, there's a cost optimization one. Now this workbook it should be 101 for everyone that's doing cost analysis. It's got really nice breakdown of usage optimization for both your compute, storage, and networking. Those are the primary drivers of costs in any cloud environment. It's super slick. It pulls all of the, you know, all these kind of like, it's a great starting point. It's where I always start every single time, both when I first encounter a new customer or on a monthly or even a bi-weekly basis, depending on the environment. I look at this all the time. I'm looking for things such as deallocated virtual machines that have been shut off for a long time. Everyone forgets about them because they think, well, it's not charging anything anymore. It's turned off, which is true. It's not charging you for compute, but you're still paying for disk. A lot of these resources you're still paying for. You might not be paying for the computer, the license, but you're paying for disk. So those are good cleanup items. I also, in the storage area, I'm looking for, and this is a big one, unattached or orphaned resources, particularly with managed disks. I had one customer that I found they were paying for over $50,000 a month in disk that was attached to nothing. And I couldn't sleep all weekend. When I found it late on a Friday, and I didn't believe myself at first because I'm like, this can't be. But sure enough, they had 55 grand a month in disk. And the reason this happens, most common reasons are data refreshes or replacing virtual machines, or, you know, some kind of thing happened where an engineer did a task and then just forgot about cleaning it up afterward. And so this workbook will help you find those things really quickly.
So that's like free candy, right? This is like ultimately what people traditionally thought, hey, I'll get somebody to come in here and do a once over my environment who isn't from my team, who, you know, an outside assessment. This is, I hate to say Microsoft's stealing a little bit of the magic of some consultants like us. They're giving some tools now in general availability that will catch some of these low-hanging fruit that we used to have scripts and tools that would run against environments to find this stuff. I mean, it's been done so much to death that now Microsoft's making it a standard part. But I don't think most people know that this is now out there and available. And we're kind of blowing people's minds every time we bring it up in front of them, show them, hey, it's part of
I'm
the
really
platform now.
surprised how few
Yeah.
people know about that tool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Other things like Orphan snapshots, you know, those, you know, or from a networking perspective, you know, there's a lot of like death by a thousand cuts things you can find in here, things like unattached public IP addresses that, you know, were deployed and then removed but never cleaned up. So you'll find all kinds of things in there. I've even from a even and there's some design things that come out of it too,
Yeah.
especially under the networking space. Like I've found, you know, there'll be like two premium firewalls in the same region. Well, why are there two? You know, why do you have two Azure premium firewalls in one region when one would do the job? You know, so
Yeah.
there's a lot of like things that come up in this that you just can ask the question. Maybe there's a reason for it. Maybe there's a project or a separate thing, but oftentimes what I find is I ask the question and they're like, oh, I didn't know that. And yeah, we should probably clean this up.
Yeah, operational stuff I saw in there, like I guess end of life is maybe not the correct term, but things that are going to be deprecated in the future, Microsoft will send out those mass notifications, but you never know. Does that apply to me? I think there's one in there that'll show you things like, oh, your public IPs need to be on the latest version. They're not. And it'll kind of help with some of that stuff too. So I know we focus
So
on
that's
cost
a
optimization, but yeah.
yeah, so you're talking about another workbook called Services Retirement.
There you
And
go.
that one's really good for exactly what you said. You call it, so you'd find that in the same place. That one, it's really powerful because it'll tell you how many you know, it'll give you everything that's retiring in the next 3 years, but it'll also tell you how many resources you have that might be impacted. So, you know, in the example you gave, public IP basic SKU is going into end of life just now recently. And so we've had a lot of work with customers lately to get all their virtual network gateways upgraded and their get these public IPs in a supportable place. It can be a little confusing, that services retirement one. I have a lot of scripts that I use to help identify what these resources are. Sometimes it'll say you have 12 of this thing, but we won't tell you what they are. So
Yeah.
but it's a good like notification loop to be aware of. And that's another one I always check as part of kind of my reviews. Not necessarily cost related.
Yeah. I mean, I think also it would help if people did a little bit of homework around reservations and stuff in general, because I think a lot of what you see in Advisor, I hate to say it, I think a lot of customers walk past Advisor because they feel like all it ever tells them is to buy reservations. But it's telling you to buy reservations for a pretty good reason, right? I mean, I talked to a customer yesterday. There were four people on the phone. Like I said, none of them were Azure architects. I started showing them this stuff. And they were like, wow, okay. They came to talk about renewing a couple of reservations, but I talked to them about you should look and see what is it suggesting. You have some new workloads you deployed over the last 6 months. Maybe you should reserve those. And the trepidation there, they didn't quite want to pull the trigger at first because they thought, man, we're gonna have to pay everything up front. This is a 3-year lock-in, and none of us are experts. We're gonna want to check with our architect. I said, absolutely. You should check with, you know, the architect who built the environment. However, some information you may not know, you can do 1 year. That is a thing for most things. You can commit to only 1 year. You can pay monthly. That wasn't the case years ago, but you can pay monthly now. And lastly, there is a little bit of wiggle room. Like this wasn't a large environment that we were talking about, and you can return up to $50,000 of your remaining RIs. So if something changes in the future, you need to move to another family of VMs, for example. And okay, I'm halfway through my RIs, my 1 year RIs. You can return the remaining balance on that RI, and move it to another one. And if you need to go up, of course, Microsoft's going to let you add on and always scale up. So there is a commitment there. But I mean, you run into a lot of customers who just aren't aware of this kind of stuff and lean on us to get kind of navigated through feeling confident in making a purchase that ultimately it's going to chip off, what, 40, 60%?
Dramatic difference. So talking about reserved instances and savings plans, maybe just high level really quick what the differences are. Mm-hmm. So both of them are basically a commitment to Microsoft that you are going to purchase this thing. And by doing that commitment, Microsoft will give you a discount. And generally, at least in the compute area, a reserved instance for a 1 year is generally around 40% discount. It's not, it is a significant number. 3 year is up to like 60% of a discount. Savings plans is a lot less, or not, you know, it's still significant. It's usually around 30%. That's a real number. Now the advantages and disadvantages of each one, savings plans are kind of the click it and forget about it. It's if you've got a very complicated environment across multiple regions, you can just say, hey, Microsoft, I'm going to commit to X amount of compute per hour compute, and I'm going to take my 30% discount, and then I don't have to worry about it. The disadvantage with a savings plan, besides being a less discount, it's 30% versus 40 to 60%. The other disadvantage with the savings plan is you cannot return it. You cannot exchange it. Once you've committed to a savings plan, you are locked in. So you want to be very cautious. I've seen this happen, unfortunately, with a customer that wanted to do savings plans, and then they retired an application, and now they're stuck. They don't have another use for the compute workload, but they're stuck. They've committed, and there's not much you can do about it. The reserved instance advantage is, besides a steeper discount, and then this is what Dan was getting into, you can return in every 12-month rolling period, you can return up to $50,000 of commitment, and that rolls off every 12 months. So let's say you return today $20,000 worth of future commit. 1 year from now, that $20,000 rolls off, and you can return up to $20,000 again for that. The other advantage is exchange. In the compute area, compute SKUs, that's super powerful. So I have a lot of customers that are very hesitant to do reserved instances for a number of reasons. One, we don't know if we're going to need it, and then another reason is, well, and this is the one I probably see more often, the hesitant to do a reserved instance is, well, we have a lifecycle plan. We're going to be refactoring this application, and we're going to be, replacing this with a new version. And so we don't want to do a 1 year or a 3 year commitment. But what they don't realize is you can exchange them, and it's prorated. So what I do, especially with the large customers that have a long and continuous development cycle, is I will start hammering away at the reserved instances, the biggest number of SKUs, and they're shared families. So depending on how your environment's built, if the SKUs are cross compatible, when you turn on a thing in Azure, a resource that wants a DSV5 series compute, it doesn't matter if it's a virtual machine scale set, an AVD, a server, Windows, Linux, doesn't matter. It's going to look, is there a reserved instance? Is there a savings plan? I'm going to charge you. And then I'm going to charge you pay as you go if you don't have it. So a lot of people think, well, if I do a reserved instance, I have to know exactly, this reserved instance is only for this server, which is not true. It's shared. You can have shared scope. It is limited to the region, so you can't purchase a reserved instance for North Central US and have East US resource utilize it. So that's the disadvantage. Like in a savings plan, it's cross. So anyways, those are very big pieces. people are afraid to do the exchanges and returns. If you aren't doing them, then I don't, you know, you need to ask someone about it. And because Microsoft keeps threatening to take that away. I think they tried really hard a couple years ago. They were going to say, we're going to take away the returns. And the pushback was so dramatic that they haven't. And I think the promise right now is if that policy were to ever change, you'd have a 6-month lead time before it would change. So there is no reason to stop taking advantage of reserved instances. I'm always looking at reserved instances. Now, another reason people don't want to do reserved instances is, well, we got to right size it, right? Like, you know, which is true. Like, a common thing that I see often with cloud adoption from traditional IT departments is a lift and shift from on-prem to cloud. And often, almost 100% of the time, they've over allocated resources because, you know, you come from an on-prem environment where you're incentivized to let the hypervisor take care of it and just over allocate everything, to a cloud environment where you pay for what you allocate. So, you know, engineers are commonly hesitant to not want to affect performance, so they'll over allocate. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times people don't want to do reserved instances because they want to do the complicated technical work of right sizing, which is very important. But I don't like waiting for that. I think that one of the things I like to talk about with cost optimization is cadence and mm-hmm. momentum. It's easy to get paralyzed when going into this world of cost optimization. There's a lot of data. There's a lot of technical aspects, but there's a lot of stuff that's not technical. And when you start getting into the reserved instances and starting to understand, you have flexibility with them. Mm-hmm. So I don't recommend waiting till you get all of your technical ducks in a row for right sizing and even for planning generally, unless you're rock solid. I don't know about you guys, but development plans tend to drag on for a long time, and you could go 6 months paying full price when you could have been getting even a 60% discount on all of those workloads. So
yeah, I mean, even if you're sure, oh, we're going to scale down, we're just not sure where and how much. Okay, be optimistic and say, oh, if you cut, you know, these workloads by half and you need half as much resource, then reserve that half. Right.
Right.
You can buy more reservations later. You, like we were saying, Microsoft will let you up the ante later. Don't be your own enemy by waiting and being hesitant. Just knowing your wiggle room, how the returns and exchanges work, getting a little schooled, spending the 15 minutes reading up on that will save you months of paying pay-go rates for an entire environment that just got catapulted or lifted and shifted into the cloud. And that's awesome. But yeah, you were saying cadence, and you strike cadences regularly with customers to make sure, you know, as these things start to expire. I've seen customers who had no cadence or internal process. They found out their reservations expired when their bill came. And that's, yeah, not ideal. Cadence is king, right?
Cadence is king. And that's one of the best advantages, I think, that I bring a lot of times with my customers is, you know, it oftentimes is just a 30-minute touch point. I'll have all the reports on what their consumption is, what their reserved instances are, what the utilization is. Besides expiring reserved instances, if you have, you know, I've got customers that do have a lot of development going on, especially after I save them a bunch of money, they go turn that savings into development work, right? So, you know, when you're going into these reserved instances, you need to be checking on them monthly, at least monthly, because, you know, workloads change, right? Besides the expiring reserved instances, you might have underutilized reserved instances. I had one customer who had committed to, and this is in the storage area, they committed to this really hot RA GRS storage tier. They'd committed 300 terabytes. And then this was like a couple years ago, they did the commitment. whoever, you know, they forgot that they had the commitment, they weren't keeping an eye on it, and then they wanted to look at this storage account and see how can we reduce our, you know, let's move this data around. So they did all this work to move their data into cool and cold storage tiers, not realizing that they had committed to hot storage yep. already for a 40% discount. So, you know, there's real importance in, even if it's a half hour meeting once a month, to just look, right? And it doesn't have to be a big technical takeaway. Oftentimes I do end up pulling out some technical work from looking, but the other cool thing that I wanted to mention that a lot of people don't realize when they're looking at costs are SKUs specific. So there's a lot of legacy SKUs out there, particular for platform services like application, premium application plans in Azure. One thing I just did recently for a customer, they had committed to savings plans. This is before they started working with me. They wanted the easy button. They just flat committed to a bunch of compute hour savings plans. And then they were underutilized. So they were committing, they were paying for all this compute and not using it. I took a look and I found out that they had all these premium app service plans that were in a legacy SKU that doesn't qualify for a savings plan utilization. So not only were they paying for compute that they committed that they weren't using, they were also paying full MSRP rate for other compute workloads just because it didn't qualify for the savings plan. And it was literally an easy button. We just upgraded all their app savings plans to a premium V3, and it took care of two birds with one stone. That one half hour meeting saved them thousands yeah. per month.
I mean, yes.
And there was no, upgrading the plan, there wasn't even a blip to their application. I mean, we did it midday. It didn't even matter. So,
I had similar experience yesterday. Had a cadence call with a customer, and sure enough, it wasn't a lot, but it was two RIs that they bought 3 years ago before working with us. And sure enough, they weren't being used anymore. 6 months ago, somebody spun down those VMs and they were just hanging out there. And I was like, guys, we should talk more than once a year. Like, let's up this to quarterly mm-hmm. because come on, like, I want to find this stuff for you. But yeah, the discipline to sit there and just look at it, it's like anything else. What gets measured gets managed, so to speak. And it goes back to the very top of the thing, right? Write down your process. We're going to meet quarterly. We're going to check X, Y, and Z. And, you know, Steve's in charge of the meeting and, you know, Sue's in charge of making the changes. And, you know, we'll work with our CSP. That little bit of discipline, my God, thousands just get left on the table. The one thing too, I know we've gone super deep into the weeds on like all the things that like very mature and larger environments can do. The one thing that popped in my head for people just getting started in Azure and want to keep costs under control, it's a blunt force tool, but man, set that budget. Set that day one budget, go into Azure pricing calculator, give a rough idea of what you think you're going to deploy, spin that up in the pricing calculator, get your number, maybe pad it a bit, and then put a budget in. I know they can get noisy for some environments because it does project for increases and decreases, but I swear by that tool because if you're learning Azure, boy, it can be dangerous when you start turning things on, not fully comprehending what you're turning on, but Microsoft will catch trends. If you're trending to be over budget, it can send you an alert and tell you, hey, that thing you turned on 2 days ago is already going to double your bill, right? It'll hit that budget number, or if it looks like it's going to exceed it, it'll tell you early. And sure enough, customers that are, you know, just getting started or just moved their stuff from on-prem into Azure and they have a ballpark of what it's going to cost, it's shocking, but they'll move their stuff without setting the budget. Set the budget, then migrate your stuff, and then keep an eye out for that alert to tick over. I mean, you can adjust it later if it's noisy, but you'd rather have it than not, right?
Budgets are very important, yeah. And you can set them at a subscription level. You can set them mm-hmm. even at a resource group level, right? So it's definitely a guardrail I recommend.
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we've given people a taste of like a few weeks worth of our just chats and things and knowledge sharing that we do internally. But I mean, I love talking to customers about this stuff. I can tell you do too. And I think I run into enough of them that they enjoy working with us because it's like they know that they have some blind spots. This is just cost optimization. There's other areas too. We talked about all five pillars to bring it around to that, right? And maybe to wrap us. But this is just one of the five pillars. And if you feel like you have a blind spot on one and you kind of want a personal trainer or a phone a friend, a smart guy on the line or gal, I think working with us, either just having some consulting or working with us in a CSP capacity to make sure that we're keeping an eye on things, I mean, it's a kind of mutually beneficial situation. We love doing it, and customers can sleep a little bit better at night. The cloud can be a little scary, but I think we give them a bit of a safety net, a warm fuzzy, whenever they know they have a third party kind of keeping them honest, like a personal trainer, right?
You know, one cool part about being in with a CSP is Microsoft support. So say you don't even want any service but Microsoft support. I think everyone that has worked in IT in the last 25 years has had a poor experience at one point or another with getting Microsoft support. And we have some customers that's just, you know, we get access to Premier customer support or Microsoft support. But I think even better than that is we get first look. Our seasoned cloud engineers get to take a look when you need support on something, even if we aren't managing it for you, but you just want to get support on a Microsoft thing. Our cloud engineers look at it and help triage. And if we have a quick solution for you, so you don't have to go through the pain of waiting on a who knows what Microsoft rep, you know, it's a big advantage. You can shorten that response time very quickly.
mm-hmm. Yeah, you could tell Ethan we can go all day, but yeah, I think we've dropped some free advice here that people could benefit from, but we're happy to do this anytime, man.
Yeah, I appreciate both of you coming on the podcast and going over, I mean, the strategy and then those tactical points, you know, those tools provided just that make a huge difference. And then some of that advice, you know, things that people don't know have been, I mean, enlightening to me for sure as a layperson when it comes to cloud stuff. And so again, really appreciate both of you coming on. And I hope that anybody listening got some good advice out of this and thinks of Vervent the next time that they need to dive deep into their budget for Azure.
Cool. Thanks, Ethan.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.